the late 80s, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television, and to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Pat Trek. This is the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Winogur, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I've never seen.
And I have seen it a ton of times. And Patrick, I really love this episode.
It was all right.
No, come on, dude.
No, it was all right.
It is classic Star Trek canon right here.
I mean, it seems like it's one of the ones that you need to see. I had some issues with it, but it was all right. I did not think that I would hate it as much as I did when I found out that this is the one that Joe Piscopo is in.
Joe Piscopo is in it. How could it not be?
HBO's
great?
Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, the episode we're talking about is The Outrageous O'Connor.
You know, I'm going to call him CBS Han Solo throughout this because I never remember how to say his name. So he is going to be CBS Han Solo for the purposes of this podcast. Yep.
Okay. Well, and we have a special guest with us today. Yeah. Hey, Thomas.
Yeah.
Hey, Pats.
This is my brother, Thomas. He moved up to Chicago to teach classes at IIT. And so I figured, you know, he listens to our show. He knows about as much about Star Trek as I do. That's probably fair to say, right?
Yeah. So my wife loves Star Trek. And so I've watched some Deep Space Nine with her. But I have about the same familiarity with Next Generation as you do.
Well, your wife has great taste.
And she's going to be extremely jealous that I'm on this show. Oh. She's been angling for an invite.
She's got to move to Chicago.
Yeah. Next time she comes to see you, bring her over.
Yeah.
Fun fact for this episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
At one point, O'Connor asks Data if he's ever been drunk. And Data goes, on alcohol? No.
Right, oh,
that
yeah.
That is a direct reference to the Naked Now.
Yeah, it was Polly Water. Mm-hmm. He also asks him, like, have you ever, like, experienced love or something? And he's very clear to be like, the act? Or
right.
Because Data has also had sex.
Yeah.
While on Polly Water.
He never answers that question.
No, he doesn't. He dodges it.
Uh-huh. Because he loves Tasha. That's what I think. Uh-huh. Tasha Yar, R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P. in the most, like, dumb way possible to go out.
Yeah.
Still mad about that episode.
Oh, yeah. I will be mad about that episode forever.
All right, so for Patrick's log, I found a few interesting stories. This came out December 12th, 1988. And, you know, I figured that this is applicable for Star Trek.
Yeah.
On December 12th, 1988, the leader of Scientology was freed on bail in Spain. It was not L. Ron Hubbard. He had already died, I think, by this point. It's a guy named Herbert Yench, who I was not familiar with. They were among 71 people arrested in November of that year on a 9-month probe about money laundering that was going on in Narconon, which is a Scientology, like their version of AA.
Oh.
And apparently they had been like laundering a bunch of money.
I didn't know that Narconon was.
Narconon is Scientology.
Oh, wow.
Yep. That's the thing that they always point to. It's like, look, we're not a cult. We're not stealing a bunch of money. We got Narconon. And apparently they were like laundering a bunch of money through it.
Yeah. So they are a cult.
Oh, well, yeah, I believe so. But.
Well, they like ask you questions so they can blackmail you later. Isn't that like the
yes,
big thing?
Yeah, that is one of the accusations that has been happening. But
I don't know very much about Scientology. So sorry if I offend anybody with my
ignorant
questions. Yeah,
sorry about that. I believe some weird shit too, but I try not to blackmail anybody. So yeah, and another thing that's happening is Soviets still hedging on troop pullout. Key official refuses to confirm date of Afghan withdrawal. Man, everyone is always dragging their feet on withdrawing from Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's like we never left.
I know. God, such a good thing that everything worked out okay there.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's an oasis of excellence.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much what was going on in the late 80s, which sounds like pretty much the same thing that's going on right now.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, that's what I got. So
very cool.
Get into the episode, right?
Let's do it.
Okay, so
I'm very excited for this.
I liked it more than I thought I would. I still have some issues with that, and I don't know. We could probably get into that.
I think I like it. I liked it more than I thought I would when Pat told me Joe Piscopo is an important character in this. It's very easy to exceed my expectations at that point.
Yeah.
Why does Joe Piscopo get such a bad rap? Now, whenever I see his name come up, I'm like, oh, God, it's Joe Piscopo. What happened?
He was, like, super popular in 80s Saturday Night Live, which doesn't have a good reputation.
Right.
And it's one of those things, and, like, Joe Piscopo, if you're listening to this, I'm very sorry.
And I really hope you're not a Scientologist.
I really, that too, there's all, that's always, you never know with Hollywood. I think his humor at that time has not aged well.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And there's a thing I always used to terrorize one of my friends in college with, was there's a YouTube video, and it's like called like Joe Piscopo Raps or something, but it's Joe Piscopo from his HBO show, Joe Piscopo as Andy Rooney rapping some Andy Rooney complaints in 60 minutes. It is one of the worst things that I've ever seen.
Frankly, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, that actually sounds like a pretty good premise.
No, yeah. No, it's terrible. So I would just be like, oh, hey, Jake, I got this video I want you to see. And it's just like, you know, Andy Rooney rapping. It's like, have you ever noticed that? It's Joe Piscopo.
Have you ever noticed?
Yeah, it was really terrible. That's exactly what it was like. And he would just like run out of the room screaming. That's the kind of shit that Joe Piscopo was doing at right. this time. And it was popular then. And looking back on it today, a lot of people are like, I can't believe we like this shit.
Well, and he did treat us to about a minute and a half impersonation of Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, dude, that was awful.
Who wasn't funny in the first place.
No.
But as an impersonation, even less funny.
We'll get to that part. We talk about that part of the episode. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff that Joe Piscopo was right. into.
All right. Well, poor Joe. That's
I know.
All.
I'm sorry. Hey, look, man, he's been on TV and Saturday Night Live. I haven't. So
yeah.
He's got one up on me.
Yeah, it's been a good life for the
right.
man.
He got to be in Star Trek, so...
Wait a minute. He's living my dream.
Yeah.
I could be so lucky to be Joe Piscopo.
I know. Yeah. I don't want to sound too hard on the guy. Just I don't personally find him funny.
I don't either.
Yeah.
So I guess that's that.
Yeah. Nothing we can do about that. Anyway, in this episode, The Outrageous Akana, I wasn't really sure what they were doing. Like, the Enterprise was just going somewhere. They're just kind of passing through this system called Omega Sagitta. And there's like two planets, twin planets, that are in a coalition, but they're both of different races that look just like humans, and they have a peace treaty, but they kind of don't like each other, right?
Right, cool.
So yeah, the Enterprise is going through this system, and they stumble upon something called like a Class 9 starship. It's like a cargo freighter. But it has lasers on it for some reason. I thought that was confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's
like, it only had like four little lasers.
Well, yeah, but it's just like you're driving a truck. It's like, oh, yeah, it's got a machine gun on it, though.
Yeah, but imagine if you were driving a truck through an area that could suddenly have a bunch of dangerous bear running at you.
Oh, something. Okay. I guess that makes sense.
You know, or like you go through an asteroid belt.
Yeah.
You know, you'd need some lasers.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. That makes sense now.
Yeah.
All right. So it is a cargo freighter, the Erstwhile. Mm. And it's... commanded by Captain Thadian Okona, and he's...
A.K.A. poor man's Han Solo?
CBS Han Solo, yeah. So CBS Han Solo's the captain of the ship, and he's got, like, trouble with a guidance system, and he hails the Enterprise, and it opens up, and he's, like, cracking jokes and stuff, and he's just like, oh, you know, there was a time I was considered a threat. And you know, he's got, like, sweeping hair, and you know, he's, like, kind of...
He's got a ponytail.
He's got a ponytail because it's the late 80s, and that's when that was considered cool. And he's just, like, kind of a knockoff Han Solo, I think is fair to say.
Oh, totally. Right? He's a rogue.
Yeah, so Deanna Troi points that out. Like, that's her thing. He's like, yeah, this guy is a rogue. Data has to have that explained to him because I guess he doesn't really know what that archetype character is. And I think one of the things he says is like, oh, did I hear a lady's voice?
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And you could see Riker just like
Riker is
a little bit.
Riker is like,
ooh, competition.
Yeah. He is creepy smiling this whole time.
Right.
And I think it's because like he's found a kindred spirit or someone that he wants to imagine.
Yeah, game recognizes game.
Game recognize game. Yeah.
It does. The two of them would clean up in 10 forward.
I
found him just deeply creepy.
Yeah, he was weird as hell.
O'Connor?
Yeah.
O'Connor. Yeah, I don't find Riker all that creepy, but O'Connor was, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a certain level of creep to Riker at all times.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked poor man's Han Solo, CBS Han Solo, Diet Han Solo, whatever we want to call him.
I like Diet Han Solo.
I thought he was fun. I don't know, added some nice energy to the show.
Well, yeah, and I think the reason why it was so jarring is that, to me anyways, like we haven't seen that character in Star Trek yet.
No.
And it kind of seems like the character you would need in a sci-fi drama.
Right.
Right?
Like a fun-loving, swashbuckling kind of guy.
And it's weird that that character hasn't existed, and then when you finally see it, you're like, oh yeah, this doesn't fit in this universe at all. Now I understand why they haven't done this.
Right. Okay, fair.
I mean, that's part of the problem that I had with it. And
is that he's like a puzzle piece that doesn't belong?
Yeah, and it's not the fault of the show. I can understand why they included this character,
right?
Why you would. It just didn't really work out for me.
Okay.
Because this is the part where it got super weird.
Okay.
They beam him over because he's got some like part of his ship that he needs the Enterprise to repair.
Right. They have the replicator technology to fix.
Yeah. And it goes through this thing where he's just like standing jauntily or something. They're taking weapons off of him. He says something weird, kind of racist to Worf.
A Klingon. Not enough wars to fight?
Yeah, I know. Which is like, okay, that would be frowned upon in this world, right? And then he just like creepily, aggressively flirts with the lady that's running the transporter.
Yes.
And then she starts to like it.
Yes.
And
it's the 80s.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You try hard enough, the women will love you.
Yeah, you'd think that like Star Trek Federation people would be like, I'm working right now, you asshole.
Right.
This is sexual harassment.
Like any modern person today.
Right,
would
like
be.
Even modern people today would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, he's also very surprised that a woman is involved in like any kind of job on the Enterprise.
Yeah,
yeah. Ooh, a lady is like what he says every time. And it's like no one points out, it's like, yeah, that's not weird. Yeah. It's like the 25th century.
I want to go back to his introduction onto the Enterprise, because before he starts hitting on, I forget who's running the transporter.
I don't think it even says her name.
He is introduced to Commander Data and then just turns to Wesley and does not even make eye contact with Data. And when it's pointed out, no, this is Commander Data, he continues to ignore him. He is a space racist.
Yeah. Oh, he's totally a space racist.
Definitely.
Spacist.
And no one really, like, calls him out on it. It's like, hey, dude, we don't talk like that.
Yeah.
And he's still seen as like, oh, this fun-loving rogue by everyone on the ship.
But that woman running the transporter
was totally into it.
Was totally
eventually
into it.
Eventually,
so
after she was harassed enough.
Reserved or thoughtful or anything at that moment.
Yeah, I know.
You know what, too? Somebody told me on Twitter, I think it was Engineer P.E., that's Lois Lane.
Oh, shit, that
from
is.
Lois and Clark.
From Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
I think he's right.
I think he is right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, is that crazy?
That is weird. So her name is Robinson, according to Memory Alpha. So he is charmed. Robinson, he's walking with Data to like look at the repairs and stuff, and they start talking about like humor, human characteristics, and this is when, you know, Data dodges the question as of like, have you had sex yet? Because yes, he has. I don't think he wants to talk about it.
No, because he's in love.
He's in love.
Yeah,
still
he made
with
love.
Tasha Yar. God, that episode was so weird.
The Naked Now?
Yeah.
I think I gave that a set to kill.
I don't know why you did.
It's referenced so often. You need to watch Naked Now to understand
the relationship. I think we have different criteria. Like, if there's a bad episode, I just want someone to explain it to me so I don't waste 45 minutes.
If there's a bad episode, I need you to digest it and love it.
agree to disagree. But they're talking about humor, and Data is just entranced by this idea of like, what do humans find funny? And so he goes to 10 forward and he talks to Guinan, who in real life is a comedian. Whoopi Goldberg was famous for being a comedian at this point in the late 80s. And she like tries these jokes out on him that I didn't think were very funny.
No, Guinan's jokes are bad.
I think any of the jokes that they write on purpose in Star Trek aren't very funny. There are times when Star Trek is funny,
yeah.
And it's either when it's like unintentional or when someone is telling Data to shut up is usually the stuff that I find funny. But the jokes are just like, because they're all about like future alien races, that it's just like, yeah, I don't get it.
I really wanted to hear, this is later in the episode, that joke where some Ferengi was in the setup.
Right.
Because he's doing all these classic jokes, but then he had one with a Ferengi in it.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be a classic Bonville
exactly.
joke.
It's probably just like some version of a racist joke today.
Yeah, I think
like
it was.
A Ferengi, a Cardassian, not Cardassian.
No, it is. It's a Cardassian.
Oh, yeah. They all go bowling together, something like that.
Yeah.
And then it's interrupted.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing.
But what happened?
Yeah. What do they do when they go bowling? Are you over gold latinum? Sorry, that's Deep Space Nine. You're not going to get that
I don't know what that is. So yeah, Guinan is like trying out these jokes on him. She's like, look, Data, the problem is you. It's like you don't understand humor. So why don't you try to get guidance from a higher power, which in your case would be the holodeck, because that's, you know, a stronger computer.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, okay. That's a great idea. He goes to the holodeck, and he's like, oh, holodeck, blow a humongous hole in the ship, please. Or, like, open up a portal to another dimension and, like, almost destroy us, because that's what happens every time we use this fucking thing.
No. It's being used for a great purpose. This
so he's
time.
Asking it to, like, who's the funniest person ever lived?
Stuart Lee.
Stuart Lee's a great comedian, but it gives him some dude from, like, the 2300s.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I want a generic comedian. So it gives him Joe Piscopo, which I'm surprised Joe Piscopo wasn't like offended. I mean, he's not Joe Piscopo as himself. He's just like some standard, you know, Borscht Belt comedian from the 50s.
Yeah, and, very hacky kind of.
Oh, yeah. Comedian. It is like, and the episode, I think, recognizes it, that like this is super hacky comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes and sees Joe Piscopo. He's like in this comedy club but wearing a tuxedo. And he's just kind of like the standard guy from the 60s that would be having a big cigar and not doing observational humor at all. It's just list of jokes.
Yeah.
And he runs him through this routine where it's like Data just doesn't understand any of these jokes. Like, and one of them wasn't even funny. It was just like, oh, what's funny? Tip O'Neill in a dress. And I think, Thomas, you were pointing out before we started the stream that they wear dress, like men wear dresses in Star Trek.
Right.
They've kind of gotten past the point where that would be anything to be ashamed of.
Yeah. Right.
They've evolved past transphobia.
Yeah, exactly.
Data does not find this joke funny.
No, he doesn't. And then he's like, oh, briefcase shaped like a fish. He's like, okay, I guess.
Briefcase joke, that's kind of funny.
I guess.
But when you think about the types of aliens they've encountered, I bet you there's been a lot of briefcase shaped like fish.
Right.
You know? There's all sorts of weird things they've seen.
Because like what he's trying to do is like show him, it's like, oh, things that you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, like juxtaposition.
Juxtaposition. But the thing is like, well, he's traveled like all throughout the galaxy. He's seen plenty of unexpected things. So
yeah.
Like his whole concept of humor would probably be different because he's experienced so much and he's seen so many unexpected things.
Yeah, it's true. I would say Data's big mistake was not going with a modern comedian.
Exactly.
Like, why go with this ancient comedian? He's not going to teach you anything.
Right.
I think the idea was that the form of humor is going to be the same. The reasons that things are funny is going to be the same from the 20th century to the 23rd century. That's why you want someone who's generic. He wants to see how these jokes get put together, why that counts as funny.
Man,
but still, if you look at the style of humor today compared to the style that Joe Piscopo is doing in this episode, and he's just called the comedian, I believe.
The comic. Yeah.
Now it's like this kind of confessional style of stand-up.
It's totally different.
So different from what Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, because like one of the things that he does is like, no, this is funny. And he puts in false teeth and does like this Jerry Lewis impression where he's like falling around on the stage. And
that bit goes on for a while.
It was way too long. And, you know, if he was like saying, so like, you know what's funny is the concept of the day the clown cried. just like the fact that that got made and Jerry Lewis thought it was a great idea and now is like trying to hide footage of it for the rest of his life. That is hilarious.
Jerry Lewis.
If he had just ripped on Jerry Lewis instead of trying to imitate something that he already did and people only found funny in 1960s US or 1990s France, then like that would have been funny. But instead, no, it's just him and Data pretending to be Jerry Lewis
right.
for like a minute and a half.
It's kind of funny to watch Data.
Oh, no, it's great to watch Brent Spiner do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Brent Spiner, hands down, funniest person throughout the episode.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably the funniest person throughout the series.
Yes.
From what I've seen so far.
Yeah, totally agree. And that's a great assessment, Patrick.
And it is really, I will admit, it is fun to watch him overact as Data.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, so he goes back to 10-4 and he's, like, trying out the material on Guinan, and he's got just like a huge cigar in his hand and is robotically moving his arms back and forth while he's telling these shitty jokes, and she's just like, dude, that's not funny. But you know, this is where he gives the he starts giving the Ferengi joke,
and she's like, you know, you gotta really stop.
Right. Yeah. I think this is where she mentions that it's like your timing is off.
Yeah.
And he says, but my timing is digital, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And she's like, Data, that's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, you finally actually told a joke, and he doesn't understand that he did, because he still doesn't really get humor.
Yeah. How could he?
I know.
Why
is he doing this to himself?
Well, he's trying to learn, and he's trying to become more human, and that is a huge theme of the show.
Yeah.
And it has been the whole time. There are plenty of humans who cannot perform comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, comedy is a skill and a magic trick of its own.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, to be human and to understand humor, it's like, go to a lot of parties, Data, you know? Like,
right, yeah.
Well, again, shouldn't have hired Joe Piscopo.
Well, there's actually a somewhat moving segment where Data is explaining why he wants to learn how to tell jokes. He says, I want to feel included. I want to be part of, I forget the exact words, but he feels left out.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be a great comic, but he doesn't even get why other people are laughing. And so that feels isolating.
Mm, it's true.
He could turn that into confessional humor.
He right. could.
Yeah. But he didn't. He didn't go with like 2000 era. He went with like Borscht Belt 60s comedians. That's a totally different thing.
Stuart Lee.
Yeah, just goes.
You should have gone with Stuart Lee.
Yeah.
Everyone been like, what a jerk.
So he gets called up to the ship, though. He's got interrupted because there's another ship hailing the Enterprise. There's this guy, Deben. He's yelling at Captain Picard. He's like, you're in our territory, and, you know, we're going to fire on you. And everyone's just like, well, this guy can't really do anything. And Picard points out, well, we are in his territory. So
you're technically in his solar system.
Yeah. So let's hear him out. All this Deben guy wants is Okana or CBS Han Solo. It's like that's
Han Solo.
He's like, this guy is a criminal. He doesn't really say what he did, mm-hmm. but he's like, I will not be satisfied until he is on our ship.
Skim Han Solo.
Yes. So then they get a hailing from another ship from this other planet, Strelib. And they said the same things, like, we're pissed at this guy. He needs to face justice, but only with us.
So this didn't hook you at all?
No, I thought it was interesting. And my favorite part of this episode was how Picard dealt with it.
Right.
He's just annoyed.
I loved the looks of exasperation on Stewart's face the entire time when Half Solo is acting
a good one.
And he just goes, ugh.
Like, he's just muting them the whole time and letting them, like, yell into the void and just like turns them off. Because, like, how many times has Picard dealt with shit like this?
Right. And these two are so harmless to him. There are no stakes for Patrick or for Captain Picard.
Right.
It's just a matter of, like, I have this dilemma of what to do with this guy I picked up.
Yeah. And, like, they interrupt him where he gets called over to the bridge, but it's Worf has to go pick him up. And, you know, he is interrupted with some other lady that, you know, he is charmed.
Yeah, and you skipped over the part where he does hook up with Lois Lane.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He just, like, walks right into her room, and she's dressed very sexually.
Yeah.
She's got no shoes on, which to me...
Star Trek, that's a big deal?
Well, to me, this is like me probably telling you a little bit too much about myself. But if you walk into a person that you're sexually interested in's room, and they're already kind of half naked, that implies a lot. And to me, shoes are a big indication, like, nothing on your feet is like you're ready to take it off. You
everything
know?
Is carpeted on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
It looks really comfortable.
So
I would have no shoes all the time.
Oh, man. I'd be thinking you're constantly trying to hook up with me. I don't know. There was something about the way she was dressed. And I know they did this on purpose where I was like, man, she is like ready to get down right now.
Yeah. I mean, because like when he was talking
to
her.
For 10 seconds.
Right. And It was so weird. That's why this was jarring for me, because like their initial reaction, she was just like, buzz off, dude.
Yeah.
I'm at work. Which is how I would imagine someone in the Enterprise would do.
Yeah.
You know? I think that was definitely, it's like, oh, this was made in the late 80s.
Yeah. Well, again, it's that idea, it's privilege, right? If you try hard enough,
you're
going to convert that lady.
And if you're roguish enough, it's like, this is what ladies like, right? And it's like, well, maybe some.
Some, sure. But he's got space diseases, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you have to. At that rate, he hooked up with two different women. First of all, the stamina of this man.
Yeah.
But he hooked up
now,
with...
it wasn't clear how much time had passed.
Okay, that's fair.
So maybe this is different days or something. I don't know.
He had time to refill.
Right.
This is terrible.
Yeah.
This is bad.
So the rest of this, we're going to be talking about CBS Han Solo's balls. What are they filled
well,
with? How fast do they fill?
They enter warp or impulse power.
So, we, there's also a bit earlier here where Wesley is just very impressed with Half Solo. I'm making that happen, Half Solo.
Okay. I love it. Half Solo is my favorite.
And that sets us up nicely for the end of the episode where he kind of changes his evaluation.
Yeah.
Stars in his eyes at
this
point.
Wesley like wants to be this dude at first.
Well, who wouldn't?
Well, if you're like a 15-year-old kid who is for some reason an ensign on a starship, if you're a 15-year-old kid, like, that's the coolest thing in the world to you. You know, like when you're a kid, it's like Han Solo. Shit, Han Solo still is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to be Han Solo as
well.
Kid.
Yeah. So, like, of course, Wesley would, you know, want to emulate this guy in some way. And I think later on he becomes disillusioned with him, which is probably a good idea because Okana has gotten everyone on the ship in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, Worf is coming to get him, and he's just like, oh, I don't want to be interrupted. He almost fights with Worf because he's like, look, dude, you got to go to the bridge. You messed up.
The chat says, look, in the future, they have all sorts of hypo sprays.
He just gets deloused as soon as he gets on the ship. They're just scrubbing him with, like, broom, throwing powder on him.
Back to your point, though, about Wesley and the rogue type character, I do think they always end up disappointing, don't they? Like, that's like the
but that's
hard
the
part.
Lesson you're supposed to learn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I thought it was a great use of Wesley. I know.
Yeah. Patrick, I'm not a fan of him, but I think that this was a good use. I agree.
Probably the best so far.
Yeah. I think the Academy episode was pretty
good. Okay, yeah.
Too.
You couldn't do that with really anyone else on the Enterprise because they've all been to the Academy.
Right, yeah.
So by default.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, Thomas. This is probably Wesley's best episode to date.
Yeah.
Right?
And there's, well, there's so little of him, so that's great.
He's only in two scenes.
He has
turnkey moments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He is that ambassador for what the ship feels.
Yeah. And I think by this point, this is when they're starting to get kind of exasperated with him, because they're like, he goes over the bridge, and they're like, oh, look what you're making us deal with. And he's just, you know, kind of smarming his way around the bridge and swishing his ponytail around, because it's the late 80s, and that's what we think is cool then. And, like, finally, they get down to what Devin, one of the people from the planet, is mad at him over. And he just brings out his daughter. He's like, yeah, you impregnated my daughter. You got to come here and do the right thing. And they're like, they mute him and they start deliberating over. It's like, oh, this is very archaic standards of whatever. It's like, yeah, I know that's like, you know, make an honest woman out of something. It's extremely archaic and a weird thing to say. But I can understand being mad at like, oh, you impregnated me and you are doing nothing to financially support the child. I can understand being pissed about that.
Yes.
You know.
Though Pat pointed out when I said, he's got to pay child support. Come on. Pat says, oh, no, they're beyond money. They don't even have money anymore.
Well, is this society beyond money?
But
though?
That's the thing. The Enterprise wouldn't really think in the context of child support, would they?
Oh, I guess so.
Still, emotional labor required to support. That's still something you ought to provide.
Right.
But 2-3 episodes when Deanna Troi got pregnant?
Yeah, they're collectively raised.
Yeah.
Kids are like, everyone pitches in.
Yeah. Huh.
So their entire concept of child rearing is like totally different from ours.
All right.
So maybe they just don't understand like why people would be pissed if it's like, they have two parent homes. You know, this is someone has to help. You can't just have one person raising the kid, because the Enterprise is like, oh, I don't understand. It's like, we just raise our kids in the nursery and we don't have money. So what's the big deal?
I'm being temporally ethnocentric. right. demanding that they adhere to our standards of child support.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So that's the deal that Okana is in. And then there's another problem. Kushel, the guy in the other ship, remember, that was mad at him. He's like, he stole the Jewel of Theseia, and he used my son to do it. He wasn't really clear on how, or maybe I missed it, how Okana used his son
manipulated him
to, like, hey, give me this jewel. And so he wants him handed over. And if Okana goes to Devon, the Theseans, Kushel's ship, will go to war with Devon. So Picard's in a bind.
Yeah.
Like,
where's the prime directive in all of this?
I have no idea.
It seems
has it already been violated?
Yeah, they're heavily involved or in the politics between the two of these different neighboring planets. Is that what they are?
Yeah. They're in a federation, but it's a very tenuous one.
Oh, so they're in the federation.
No, in a federation on their own.
Oh.
They're twin planets.
Picard should be out of here. He should just kick Half Solo out. Right? I love that.
Yeah. Does the Prime Directive only prohibit interfering with pre-warp societies, or is it broader? I still don't know.
It's a bit broader than that. So originally it was just pre-warp, but really it's a doctrine of which to live by, but it's not a fixed set rule. Mm-hmm. And it's to not get involved in basically politics that have nothing to do with the Federation itself.
Mm-hmm.
So don't get involved in local politics, for example. Even if it's a society that has warp, has nothing to do with the Federation if it's, you know, Ferengi colonies fighting with one another. Mm-hmm. Like, that is their problem. That's nothing to do with us.
I think what happened in this case, though, is that they were obligated to help Okana, and when they did that, they didn't realize it would cause all this other, you know, all these other issues.
Picard does refer a couple times at this point to Starfleet regulations. So he doesn't talk about the Prime Directive, but he says, well, Starfleet regulations, I was required to help.
Yeah.
Starfleet regulations don't require me to do anything other than let you go. And
yeah, and that's a conversation he has with Okana. He's like, well, look, there's nothing I can do. Maybe the best thing is just put you back in the erstwhile and you can find some other place to live. And that's what he agrees to do. But then he goes back down to engineering. I guess his ship has been fixed. And he's talking to Wesley. And this is where Wesley, I think, kind of gets disillusioned. He's just like, you just keep moving everywhere. Like, don't you miss your friends or whatever? It turns out Okana has no friends. He's just alone in the ship, basically, going off being a rogue. You kind of feel bad for him.
He needs a Chewbacca.
Yeah. He needs a buddy.
He needs a dog.
Yeah. And I think Okana starts to realize, like, man, I need to grow up a little bit. Like, this isn't a life for anybody. And go ahead.
Oh, no. See, what is he? Something about I use places up.
Yes.
And then Wesley says, I'm not talking about places.
Right.
And he says, I know.
Yeah.
So he's talking about people, right?
Yeah. He uses people up.
Mm.
So he's got to go. He's like, I got to do the right thing. And I got to turn myself in. But it's not clear what exactly his plan is. What happens is Picard is like, all right, both parties come up here on the Enterprise. I'm tired of, like, having to mute y'all all the time. It's annoying.
But it's hilarious.
It's very funny, but we have to hash this out face to face.
It was great when he had them both muted.
Oh, that was awesome.
Both yelling.
Yeah, and then he just turns it off.
Funnier than all of Joe Piscopo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go, and it's just like these two different parties are trying to settle whatever their claims are, and they hate each other, even though I think they're technically supposed to be in some kind of alliance. And after a while, it's discovered that Okana is not the father of this child. He's trying to agree. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and marry her. That seems like a better sentence than to have to be in prison for stealing this jewel.
Right, of course.
Yeah. So
gorgeous.
Yeah. So Kushnell's son, Benzin, is like, no, you can't. You can't do that. And that's when we realize that, it's that he's actually the father of this kid. And the reason why this is a problem is because, if they're married, it's like a Romeo and Juliet situation.
Right.
So to avoid war, Okana was going to insert himself into the situation and
Turns out he's a good guy after all.
Yeah, he was. What happened with the jewel is he was like the go-between between this couple and Benzin's heir. Like his right is the jewel. That's his inheritance, and he was giving it to Yanar as like an engagement ring.
Right.
And Okana was like the courier for the thing, and so that's why they thought he stole it. He gave it to her, which is why they thought that he was the father of her baby.
Mm-hmm.
So he like patches up this, you know, this spat, and they start quarreling again because they're like, oh, you know, he's going to live on our planet. No, I'm not going to have my grandson raised by... And Picard's just like, all right, get the fuck off the ship. I'm sick of this.
Solve your issues elsewhere.
Yeah, just like, my work here is done. Please go away.
I love Picard in this episode.
Yeah.
We could spend every single session of Patrick talking about how great of an actor Patrick Stewart is, because he played agitated yet understanding so well.
And just very, very short moments where you get, it's much more fleshed out, sort of the emotional depth. I can't believe I'm talking about the emotional depth of like a second season of Star Trek episode.
I mean, but what there was, we got to work with what we got here.
He was great.
I totally agree. And one of the reasons I love this episode is because it's Brent Spiner and Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah.
And so every scene has something really captivating happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and speaking of Brent Spiner, we're back with him and Guinan, and they're about to participate in like this comedy show. They go and talk to the comic. He's like, you know what? If you really want to practice material, you have to do it in front of an audience.
Yeah.
So he calls up like this hollow audience, and Joe Piscopo is, you know, warming him up, and he's cracking jokes and stuff, and he introduces Data, who, again, is doing the robotic thing with his arms while holding a big cigar, and he's telling all these lame jokes. But they laugh at everything. And when he starts to realize they're laughing in the middle of his jokes, he hasn't even gotten to the punchline.
Well, and he notices he gives a thumbs up to the comic. And
they laugh at that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it turns out they're programmed to laugh at anything he says or does. And this isn't the way to learn what humor is.
No.
So he's like, all right, computer, get rid of the audience and get rid of the comic. And Guinan tells him, like, look, you know, it's not being able to laugh or whatever. That's not what makes people human. But Data's like, you know, I see you're right, but this is uniquely human to find humor. And that's why I want to learn it so bad. So it's not even that he wants to know what's funny. He just sees this as like, in his mind, this is the centerpiece of being human.
Yeah.
There's no one else that does it. So he is very depressed about this.
But that's not true. We have seen a lot of alien races with humor.
Right, yeah.
The Ferengi are hilarious.
They're great, especially in Deep Space Nine.
I think maybe he meant like humanoid.
Yeah, so he didn't mean human beings. He meant...
Because Guinan's not human either.
Oh, that's right.
Right?
Yeah. That's why her jokes were so bad.
Oh. Because like she's... I forget what...
I don't remember what it is.
Alien group.
She's like super old.
Isn't there some kind of like Benjamin Button thing going?
She's like
aging backwards.
Yeah, she's
something.
Like 1,000 years old or something.
Yeah, she's very old.
Okay. Yeah. So when we're closing out, it's on the bridge. Data, I forget what joke Data said, but it like made everyone burst out laughing.
He said, they said like, say goodbye, Data. And he goes, goodbye, Data.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, that's funny to... I guess people on the Enterprise.
Listen, they have no entertainment.
That's true. All they got is the harp ladies.
That is a classic joke.
I know.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
And that's what he says. He's like, no, it's Burns and Allen. And then he starts like accessing his memory banks for all these other jokes. And finally, like people are like, Data, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Fly the ship. Fly the ship, Data, stop. And that's basically how it ends.
End scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Yeah. Them being mad at Data is the stuff that I genuinely find funny.
Yeah.
I don't find Data's jokes funny, but them telling Data to shut up because he like physically is unable to stop accessing his memory banks, it's like, yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, and it's a good running joke.
It is.
Consistently do. All right, Thomas. Well, this is the part of Pat Trek where we like to rate the episode. If we loved it, thought it was amazing, you must watch it. It is set to kill. If it's it's okay, comes up in the queue, make sure to check it out, but you know, feel free to make a dinner while you're watching it. That's set to stun. And if it's boring, skip, ignore at all costs. That's leave it in the holster. So what did you think?
I'm going to say set to stun.
Okay.
There are, right. there, There are too many good parts for it to be a leave it in the holster. Patrick Stewart is very good. There are plenty of really funny bits, but it can't be a set to kill with that much half solo.
All right, Patrick?
I'm kind of on the same page. It's going to be set to stun. You know, it. I understand why they wanted to introduce this rogue character, but I do not feel like he fits with Star Trek. And it, on in hindsight, it seems like a bad fit. However, that said, I did not hate the Joe Piscopo part as much as I thought that I would. I didn't think it was funny, but I thought Data... I'd love to see Brent Spiner overact as Data.
Yeah. Agreed.
That is fun to watch. And I don't know. I really like Picard being exasperated at having to deal with these like petty bullshit problems that are super important to whatever star system he's talking to. That's great. That's one of my favorite parts about this show.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the B plot with Akana, I don't know, didn't do it for me. So it's got to be set to Sun. I'm sorry.
Once again, you're both so wrong. This is a set to kill episode.
Oh, boy. All right.
That's me killing things.
Okay. Yeah, I get it.
Dude, it is great. I think that of season two, like, you have to watch this episode. There are so many iconic moments going on here.
It's been the best one of season two that we've seen.
Wouldn't say it's like a deep episode or really makes you question humanity, but it's one of those episodes where we get to have a lot of fun, you know? And I think, like, last episode was fun in the sense of they got to do some cosplay. Yeah. We got to play around in the holodeck. This one's a lot of fun because we get to learn more about Data. We get to see Patrick Stewart just kill it as Picard. I don't know. I have a blast when I watch it. I'm smiling the whole time. It is set to kill. I love recommending this one to my friends.
How funny would it be if this ended up being one of those other, the holodeck is going to, it's going to kill us all.
Joe Piscopo is too powerful.
He's trying to get out of the holodeck.
Yeah.
I liked that last episode, by the way, Patrick. You were wrong.
So a lot of people on Twitter
people
agreed
are mad
with
at me.
Me
about
yeah.
That.
So we're talking about Elementary Dear Data, the episode that was before this one. I was the only one in the room that liked it. Patrick and Carlos were ripping on it the whole time, but Twitter,
that's my
you
job.
Have my back.
That's
thank
my job.
You. No, it's your job to assess it. My job is, I love it, so I'm already talking about it.
Yeah, it's my job is maybe sometimes disagree with you, though, because I genuinely do.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to be as honest and real as you can be.
Yeah, I'm just calling it like I see it.
But it's
you're
a good
episode. You're the fanboy here.
Yeah.
You're the liar.
I'm not lying. I do realize I have set two episodes in a row as set to kill.
Yeah.
And I got a little nervous about
great
that.
Inflation,
about it.
Man. Great inflation.
It's
a serious
inflation.
Problem.
The show is getting better.
This is, yes, it has been on an upward trajectory.
Yes!
For season two. I enjoyed the episode. You know, I'd probably watch it again. It's just, I don't think it's set to kill good to me.
Well, I love it. Even half Han Solo.
He was much better in the second half of the show.
Yes.
I'll give you that.
When he stopped being a caricature.
Yeah, and maybe that's because the character learns a little bit, but I think it was really more the actor just dials it down a little.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he looks less out of place, and he's doing fewer things that the audience is just supposed to think are charming, but are in fact creepy
and annoying. Yeah.
I know, and it's a problem of it being a television show. We had to show how charming he was so quickly,
mm-hmm.
right? Because why would anybody think that he stole that jewel or got that woman pregnant if we didn't know he was already sleeping with women
right.
on the ship?
Yeah.
So it was like a storytelling mechanism that I do think kind of puts that character to the side a little bit, and it's just like, hey, we need a rogue, and here it is.
Yeah, and that's, I think, is part of a symptom of like episodic storytelling, which is what Next Generation is.
Right, and we couldn't have... It would have been nice to have introduced him last episode, given him some time to like foster a couple
this
relationships.
This is pre-Netflix TV, though. That's
I know.
Not how they do that.
I know. That's why I set it to kill.
All right.
Because I think it's fantastic.
He was introduced by basically mooning the Enterprise. The first thing that we see is his butt towards the view screen.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That convinced me he was a rogue. Who else does that?
Yeah. Any last thoughts before we move on?
I don't know. Is there anything you want to plug, Thomas? You want to plug your class?
Yeah. Tell so if you are at IIT and you're looking for a philosophy course, civil disobedience and philosophy of punishment, but I guess I'd like to say Hi, honey. I'm sorry that I got to do this before you.
Bring her on. It will be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep listening to Pat Trek. Give us ratings on iTunes. If you have iTunes, watch Peaches and Hot Sauce videos. We're going to have a lot more of those in the coming weeks. And thanks again for listening.
As you were saying, Patrick, please give us those iTunes reviews. It has been a minute since we've gotten a fresh one. I think we're at 14 now. It'd be cool to be at 15.
Huh? That's a nice round number.
That's a nice round number. And hell, 16.
Yes,
if two people want to hook us up with reviews, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, reach for the skies, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. All 16 reviews.
16 reviews. Please listen to my other podcast called Making New Friends. We're currently in the midst of a D&D campaign because we're working on a new show that's going to be on the One Shot Network called The Dungeon Rats.
Oh, yeah.
And we're doing some character stuff. You'll notice between the last episode and the next one I'm about to post, if you're listening to Making New Friends, that Carlos, who was recently on Pat Trek, he changes like his character's voice and stuff. So we're really workshopping it through the Making New Friends podcast. And that's what Making New Friends is. It's a podcast where you get kind of behind the scenes looks at stuff we're doing here at the Peach Pit. I think that's everything.
Let's see what's out there.
Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches. Hot sauce. Peaches. Hot sauce. Hot sauce, peaches, hot sauce, peaches, hot sauce, get your peaches.